2 Corinthians 5, verse 20. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making His appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. George Shultz was actually the Secretary of State way back in the Reagan administration. And any time they brought an ambassador to the White House before they sent them to the country to where they would be going, Secretary of State Shultz would take a globe and he would set it out on his desk and he would say to the new ambassador, if you would, go to the globe and tell me which country you're from. And immediately that person would go up there and they'd be looking, and they'd say, I'm going there. He said, yeah, that's where you're going, but I ask you, which country are you from? He brought in a good friend of his who was actually at one time the Senate Majority Leader, Mike Mansfield. And he did exactly the same thing to him before he went off to serve as an ambassador for the United States. He set the globe down his head. He said, tell me, which country are you from? And he turned to the United States of America. That's my country. That's my country. I want you to think about something this morning when you talk about being an ambassador for Christ. If the Lord was to take a huge globe of the entire universe and say to you, which country do you represent? Where would you point? In fact, if you did it like this, what if without saying a word would somebody know, what country do you represent? You see, the best answer in that particular situation would be really not even a country at all. You would just point to your father. He's the one. He's the one I represent. An ambassador doesn't appoint themselves. No, they're appointed by someone else. And if you think of our relationship to Jesus and to God and to the Spirit, we're appointed by our God. He makes disciples. He makes Christians. And an ambassador doesn't support themselves. No, they're supported by the one who sends them. He supplies their needs. Remember what Jesus said to his disciples before he sent them out on that limited commission? Don't worry about what you're going to wear. Don't worry about those things. I will provide for you. You just go. For you represent me. An ambassador does not belong to the country to which they're going. And that's something that's very hard to keep in mind. Even though that's the circumstance that you're going to be living in and the culture that will be surrounding you, that's not your country. You're there to influence that country. You don't let that country influence you. And an ambassador does not enter a country for their own personal interest. They go for the interest of another. You see, we live in a great country, and I know we're all very proud of it. But the United States of America is really not our country. And I don't mean that in any unpatriotic way, and I don't mean that to be disrespectful at all. In fact, those of you that know me know that one of the greatest shows that I've enjoyed watching just over the past few months was a show that was on Netflix about all the Medal of Honor winners, and I was so disappointed when I got to the end of the series. I haven't watched television in years, so I figured this had been on for years. In 8 episodes, it was over. I'm like, now what am I going to do? Very proud to be an American. But if God was to get out a big universe, globe, and say, what's your country? I'd point to Him. I'd point to Him. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, the Apostle Paul is reminding us of who we are and what we are as we are pilgrims on this earth. And I want to begin by reading the chapter. So if you'll follow along with me, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Paul says, for we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked. For while we are still in this tent, we groan, being burdened. Not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. He who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. Now let me just stop right there, because you're going to see five big points that Paul is making here about you have a better country, you have a better home, you have something that is better. And what he begins with here right now in the first five verses is the reminder that you have a better home. Where you are now is just a temporary dwelling. Anybody here ever lived in a temporary dwelling, a temporary home? You ever had something like that? When Cheryl and I first moved to Albertville, this is when I was first kind of breaking out of my own, going into the news business, and we were moving up into North Alabama. We really hadn't found a place that we wanted to live yet, so we found some apartments that were month by month. Are those even existing still today? The month by month place, you know? If it's a month-by-month place, that probably gives you a pretty good idea of what it was like, all right? Well, we weren't only in a month-by-month place. That month-by-month place that we were moving in was also our storage facility. So we got a three-bedroom just to use the other two bedrooms to store. They were packed so full of boxes, you couldn't even get in them. In fact, even in our living room, it was all boxes. And when people from church showed up to help us move in, they started opening everything up. No, leave it in the box. Leave it in the box. I'll have to put it back later. I just need a couple of spoons, a couple of forks, a plate, one glass, and one chair. And that's pretty much all we had. And we would maneuver through the boxes. It was a temporary dwelling. You know what's great about temporary dwellings? You don't want to be there long. In fact, every single day that you come home to that dwelling, you go, I got to get out of here. I got to get out of here. And I had a sweet wife who would remind me of that without a word. Get us out of here. Paul's point in the first five verses here is your tent that he's talking about. He's actually talking about your body. He's actually talking about your physical dwelling. And he says, this is just a tent. It's not permanent. In fact, what you're clothed in now is not permanent. But here's the deal. He says you don't want to be naked. And what he's referring to in the nakedness there is that's in our relationship with the Lord. And you want to be found naked. All right? You don't want to be found wanting in that. You don't want to be found unclothed. But while you're in a tent, you definitely are going to be covered. But there's a better covering coming, and it's one that is immortal. In fact, what you find here in these words is something that he's already shared with the brethren in Corinth. If you go back to 1 Corinthians 15, you go back to the first letter, he talks about immortality, and he talks about what is mortal is taken off and immortality is put on. The perishable body goes away, and the imperishable is the one that we dwell in for eternity. And what Paul simply implores upon us to see is this. This is not your home. Don't get too comfortable here. Because if you're too comfortable here, then more than likely you have been influenced instead of being the influencer. You have a new country probably in your heart. So be careful. Be careful. There's a very good reason why many of us don't watch the news. We get too aggravated. If there's ever a day you're not aggravated by the news, look out. There's never been a time in the history of this world where anybody who is in the family of God would say, you know what? The world's pretty good. It's never existed. It's not our home. You have a better home. In fact, what you find in these words here in these first five verses, they sound a lot like Hebrews chapter 11 verses 13 to 16, where all those great men and women of faith are talking about going to a better country, a better home. Verse 4, for while we're still in this tent, we groan. Anybody here a professional groaner? Now, some of you are. You complain to me a lot. I know you people. All right? But I'm a professional groaner. There are days, and don't take me wrong, that I'm really thinking, if God just took me down, I'd be very good with it. I wouldn't be that disappointed. Groaning. See, groaning is actually a part of Christianity. I know that may sound odd. Because we're not home. You ever been really homesick? Remember your first camping trip as a kid? That's a groaning experience. And the reason that we groan, is we long to go home. But the reason we stay, we got work to do. Verse 6. So, all right. We recognize that the one who has prepared us for this very thing and given us this guarantee of that home, we live our life with courage. So, we are always of good courage. And we know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord. For we walk by faith and not by sight. Yes. We are of good courage, and while we would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord, but so whether we are at home or away, note, we make it our aim to please Him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may receive what is due, what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. The thing that he says to us right now, and what you find in verses 6 through 10, is you find a better reason. This is a better motivation, a better purpose, if you will, in life. And this is our purpose. This is our motivation. We live to please Him. We live to please Him. Go back to that example that we used in our first hour, maybe you were the one that had the opportunity to talk to that son who was in that pig pen. And you were the one that was actually able to share with him that great ministry of reconciliation. And you were blessed with the privilege of getting into that boy's heart with that message. And he went home with you. And you saw the reunion with his father. Wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great to just be the one standing there that after the father just hugs and embraces that boy for all his time, he just looks over the boy's shoulder and looks in your eyes and goes, would you not be good? You don't need a parade, a plaque. You don't need a reward. You brought joy to the Father. You brought His child back. Paul says that's why we stay. And that's why we live our life with courage. Why? Because we have a reason. And our reason is to live by faith. Notice verse 7. You've probably heard this line your whole Christian life. For we walk by faith and not by sight. Do you see the context in which it's used now? It's used in a setting which is actually very difficult. It's used to describe each and every one of us that we are foreigners in this land and that we've come to represent the King. And it's used in the context that we have a great purpose and reason in life. In other words, don't just be a Christian, live as a Christian. Don't just be one who goes to church, be the church. Don't just be one who listens to the message, share the message. If you've limited your citizenship to the King as being one who just checks something off on a form every now and then when you're required to fill it out, or you might just show up in an assembly of all His people every now and then, and you're not sharing the message, and you're not reaping the full benefit of what it means to be His ambassador. What an honor. But you'll notice that he says twice in the text. Notice in verse 6, we have courage. Verse 8, be of good courage. Why? Because it's not easy being a minister of reconciliation. It's not easy living among the foreigners and standing out as different. It's not easy living by faith and not by sight. It takes courage. It takes courage. You ever struggled to come up with the words to talk to somebody and you know it's not going to be a pleasant conversation? It may challenge a will. It may challenge the heart. It may challenge a motive. It takes courage. It's courage. But Paul says, be of good courage. Because your aim in life is to please Him. That's your aim. That is your aim. Your purpose. And so what you do is you live with that in mind. Now here's what's kind of interesting at the end of this thought. Notice what he does in verse 10. He talks about judgment. But here's the context of this judgment talk. He's not saying, all right, here's what you tell people. Turn to God or you're going to die. Not in this text. Now he reminds the ambassador to remember. One day they're going back to the king. And one day they're going to have to answer to the king. Isn't that interesting? In the midst of all this ministry of reconciliation, a reminder to the ambassador that the ambassador one day is going to have to stand before the king and the king's going to say, so what'd you do? How'd it go? And so Paul says, we make it our aim to please Him. It's a better mission, a better reason. But then verses 11 to 15, therefore, knowing the fear of the Lord, we persuade others. But what we are is known to God. And I hope it is known also to your conscience. We are not commending ourselves to you again, but giving you cause to boast about us so that you may be able to answer those who boast about outward appearance and not about what is in the heart. Let me stop right here and just give you a quick explanation of this. One of the reasons that Paul's even getting into all this in the first place is that his leadership, his credibility was actually being called into question. If you were to go back and look at just simply the history of the whole letter of 2 Corinthians, it is probably under the guideline that Paul now has written 1 Corinthians, and some good things have happened back in Corinth. Remember that man who was in sin is no longer in sin. But yet, when Titus comes to Paul and tells him that good news, Titus also comes and says, you know, I got to let you know about something else though, Paul. There's some people in the city. There's some people in the congregation. There's some people that are influencing the brethren. And they're knocking you. They're knocking you. They're questioning your authority. They're questioning your apostleship. They're questioning you. And they're saying, you know what? He doesn't talk very well. And apparently he didn't. And you know, he's probably got some abnormalities, whatever the word is. Abnormal. He's abnormal. That is apparently so glaring. It's like, you know, this guy, he's not a good speaker. He looks weird or whatever else is going on. It kind of became the ad hominem. If you can't beat somebody's argument, attack the speaker. And so Paul's justifying himself. He's actually justifying himself to the brethren here. And he says, it's not about outward appearance, but the heart. Verse 13, for if we are beside ourselves, it is for God. If we are in our right mind, it is for you. For the love of Christ controls us because we have concluded this, that one has died for all, therefore all have died. And he died for all, that those who live might no longer live for themselves, but for him who for their sake died and was raised. You know what he's saying here? We have a better king. We not only have a better reason, we have a better king, and this is very powerful. And Paul says, I'm not bragging. Some people say, I'm out of my mind. Well, if I'm out of my mind, then I'm out of my mind because I'm filled with the love of Christ. You ever been around people, and I bet you have, that you look at them in their life and you go, you're crazy. What? You're giving up your time for that. You're still giving your money more for this. You're having a Bible class all the time. You're doing this all the time. You're overdoing it. And sometimes we get very critical of those people because we feel a little guilty. And so since we don't want to commit that much, I'm going to knock on them a little bit. Paul says, if I'm out of my mind in your eyes, it's because I'm filled with the love of Christ. And let me just tell you about my king. My king is a king who died for me. My king is a king who gave himself for me. How can I not give my life to him? Paul says, I can't help but speak for my king. You jump ahead in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. In verses 3 through 10, he's going to talk about many, many, many of the challenges that came with being an apostle. And he's going to talk about all that had to be endured. And he talks about even in his own life, the afflictions, the hardships, the calamities, verse 5, the beatings, the imprisonments, the riots, the labors, the sleepless nights, the hunger. You'll notice he just talks about everything in his life that has happened. And somebody will say, you're crazy! Paul will go, yeah, I guess I am in your eyes. But I know my king. And he was crazy first. What kind of a king does that? What kind of a king steps down from his throne and suffers? What kind of a king gives up his power and let others rule over him? What kind of king humbles himself? What kind of a king does that? Well, my king. And so what you find here is you find that the reason he has a better king is because he understands the heart of his king. If I want to give you a little challenge this year, can I just give you a little challenge in your own studies? Spend some time reflecting and studying the heart of your king. There's a good book that'll help you with that. It's written by Jim McGuigan, The God of the Towel. It'll help you with that if you need some direction. But Paul says, I know my king. I would say it's fair to say in our nation in which we live right now, not everybody's thrilled with our current king. Not getting into politics. But there's never going to be an earthly king. It's going to be like this king. And so when I go and speak, says Paul, I speak on the behalf of my king, my Lord. And he's chosen me to be the ambassador for him. Verses 16 and 17, from now on, therefore, we regard no one according to the flesh. Even though we once regarded Christ according to the flesh, we regard Him thus no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old is passed away. Behold, the new has come. In these two verses, Paul talks about a better outlook on life and on others. And what Paul says is, I don't regard anyone according to the flesh. In other words, I don't go up to them and just see them as a human being. I don't see skin color. I don't see eye color. I don't see anything about their body. There is nothing physical about them that is going to catch my eye. You know what I see? I see a soul. I see something inside that terrestrial shell, and I see what is really there, and I see a soul. And more importantly, when that soul, when that person has given themselves to the Lord, I see somebody brand new, a new creation. I see an infant. I see somebody starting out. I see somebody branching out in what is new. And therefore, my perspective and my thoughts regarding my relationship with them is totally different. You ever noticed how in some situations, before you even talk to people, you've already sized them up and you have a feeling about them? You maybe think, oh, not me, I don't do that. Well, you ever gone to a ball game and had to sit by somebody on the opposite team's fan base? I love Kent Owens dearly, but I will never, ever, ever sit with that man at a Kentucky basketball game. It ain't gonna happen. He changes. I probably won't sit with Mark either. And I shouldn't say that. He's a fellow elder. It's different. Well, if we're really honest with ourselves, folks, let's just be honest. We're all prone to prejudice. And it's not just about race. It's about perceptions of lifestyles. It's about perceptions of who they are. And Paul says, I got to be careful because while I'm an ambassador for the Lord, I don't look at the outward. I'm in a foreign country. Why would I expect them to look any different than their home people? When Jesus came to seek and save the lost, should it surprise us that He hung out with the tax collectors and sinners? If He didn't, who would He hang out with? But He looked at souls. And what He understood about Himself, says Paul, is that I saw myself and what the Lord has made me now. I used to be the chief of sinners, but now I am a new creature in Christ. Therefore, I have been reborn, and the power of the gospel, the power of this ministry, the power of this word has reshaped my life, and I am taking on a new form. The old is passing away. And the new has been put on. I got one of the greatest compliments I think I've ever received in my life this morning. I had somebody come up to me and tell me I was mature. And they weren't talking about gray hair. And I was like, are you talking to me? Would you go tell my wife that? That'd be great. I would hope I'm not the same person that she married 28 years ago. I would hope that I am not the same person whom my Lord wed 38 years ago. I would hope that new is coming on day by day. And you know what that means? That means a lot of people have got to be patient with me. And that's what Paul says. I'm being patient. I have a different outlook. That person that's aggravating me, that person that's different from me, that person that may even be hurting me, that person that may be challenging me, that person that may just be out there and foreign to me, I see them different. That's a soul. And I want to bring them back. I want to bring them back. And so this brings us to the fifth part of what is better. And it's the better message to bring them back. And in verse 18 he says, All this that is better, all this is from God, who through Christ reconciled us to Himself and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the world to Himself, not counting their trespasses against them, and entrusting to us the message of reconciliation. Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making His appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God. For our sake, He made Him to be sin, who knew no sin, so that in Him we might become the righteousness of God. This means we have a better message. We have a better message to the world. And our message is a message of reconciliation. And here's what you got to hear, and this is so very important. If you don't get anything else out of this lesson, make sure you hear this next point. You don't take the world to the world. You don't take the message of the world to the world. No, you take a message of reconciliation. I think one of the biggest challenges for evangelical Christianity today is that evangelical Christianity has gotten caught up in taking the world to the world. In other words, it's like this. We too often have made it our goal to take physical comfort, physical healings, physical circumstances, physical band-aids, physical gifts to the world. And what I mean is, if I go out to the world, let's just say somebody is hurting physically, and I just bandage their body, what have I done for them eternally? If I've just gone to the person and filled their belly with physical food, what have I actually done for them? Let me give you another example. Somebody who is a doctor, who mends that body, have they truly saved them? Well, it's a noble thing to do, sharing food, mending bodies. It's a noble thing to do. But it simply prolonged the inevitable. And while, yes, that is part of our desire to help people physically, Paul says it's not our message. Our message is a message that will mend them, fill them, complete them eternally. And I feel that too often in the evangelical world, we've got lost in trying to change a culture, change morals, mend physical ills, that we forgot the message. Here's the point, people. It is not our goals as ambassadors to go into the foreign country and make the foreign country change their laws to suit our desires. And if that's what you're waiting for, you're going to be sadly disappointed. Paul says it's our desire to go and to reach the soul with a message. To be reconciled to the Father. To take them out of this country and then bring them back to God. I'm not trying to change that. I'm trying to reach this and get them out. In fact, if you go on into 2 Corinthians chapter 6, he's going to talk to Christians about don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers. How to be in the world but separate from it. I'm calling you out of it. And you do it with a message. A message of hope. Let's go back to where we started in the first hour. If you were to go to that boy who's in the pig slop, how would you encourage him to listen? Would you threaten him? Would you make demands? Would you criticize him for being a pig feeder? Or would you tell him about his father? Would you tell him about his father's love? His father sacrificed. That's why Paul also says in a previous thought, we seek to know Christ and Him crucified. The heart of the Father. That's the message. And it's a message like no other. There's no other religion. There's no other God of man that has that message. There's no other God that has died to save. And that's why Paul says, I'm an ambassador of this King. Let me leave you with one thought. If your Bible's like mine, the break doesn't end there. The chapter break may have happened, but the paragraph still continues. And here's what I want you to notice. Here's what I want you to happens with the thought that really is probably the end of the lesson here as Paul talks about ambassadorship. Chapter 6, verse 1, working together with Him, then we appeal to you. Not to receive the grace of God in vain. For he says, in a favorable time, I listened to you. And in the day of salvation, I have helped you. Behold, now is the favorable time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. This morning I want to share a message to those who are with us who have never put on Christ. Your Father loves you. Your Father sent His Son to die for you. Your Father longs to spend eternity with you. With you. He's just waiting for you to come home. He's just waiting for you to put off those filthy rags so that He can clothe you with His robe. He wants to be reconciled. And although He did nothing wrong, He's provided the plan to make everything right. Don't wait. Let today be the day of salvation. And you know what? When that takes place in your life, you know what you then become? An ambassador for Him. And that's the message you're going to go out here today and share with this world. If we can help you in any way be reconciled to your Lord, won't you come while we stand and sing?